the rose garden. Mr. and Mrs. Anstruther were at breakfast in the parlour of Westfield Hall, in the county of Essex. They were arranging plans for the day. "George," said Mrs. Anstruther, "I think you had best hit a Castle Maldon and see if you can get any of those knitted things I was speaking about which would do for my stall at the bazaar."
"Oh, well, if you wish it, Mary, of course I can do that. But I haven't half arranged to play around with Geoffrey Williamson this morning. The bazaar isn't till Thursday of next week, is it?"
"What has that to do with it, George? I should have thought you would have guessed that if I can't get the things I want in Maldon, I shall have to write to all manner of shops in town, and they are certain to send something quite unsuitable in price or quality the first time. If you have actually made an appointment with Mr. Williamson, you had better keep it. But I must say, I think you might have let me know."
"Oh, no, it wasn't really an appointment.
I quite see what you mean. I'll go. And what shall you do yourself?"
"Why, when the work of the house is arranged for, I must see about laying out a new rose garden. By the way, before you start for Maldon, I wish you would just take Collins to look at the place I've fixed upon. You know it, of course."
"Well, I'm not quite sure that I do, Mary. Did you get the upper end towards the village?"
"Good gracious, no, my dear George. I thought I had made that quite clear. No, it's that loosening around this post here. And me and the boy, we should take a little time doing all that. But now, these here seats, said Collins, appearing to appropriate this portion of the scheme as due to his own resourcefulness. Well, I can get the barrow around, and I then clear the way. Why, less than an hour's time from now, if you'll permit of it. Only what, Collins? Well, now, ain't for me to go against orders no more than what it is for you yourself, or anything else. This was added somewhat hurriedly. But if you'll pardon me, sir, this ain't the place I should have picked out from no rose garden myself. Why, look at them box and Laura's Venus. How they're ready to preclude the light from... Ah, yes, but you've got to get rid of some of them, of course. Oh, indeed, get rid of them. Yes, to be sure, but I beg your pardon, Mr. Anstruther. I'm sorry, Collins, but I must be getting on now. I hear the car at the door. Your mistress will explain exactly what she wishes. I'll tell her then that you can see your way clearing away the seats at once, and the post this afternoon. Good morning. Collins had left rubbing his chin. Mrs. Anstruther received the report with some discontent, but did not insist upon any change of plan. By 4 o'clock that afternoon, she had dismissed her husband to his golf, had dealt faithfully with Collins and with the other duties of the day, and having sent a campstool and umbrella to the proper spot, had just settled down for a sketch of the church as seen from the shrubbery, when a maid came hurrying down the path to report that Miss Wilkins had called. Miss Wilkins was one of the few remaining members of the family from whom the Anstruthers had brought the Westfield estate some few years back. She had been staying in the neighbourhood, and this was probably a farewell visit. Perhaps you could ask Miss Wilkins to join me here, said Mrs. Anstruther, and soon Miss Wilkins right night. Aren't you sleepy? Someone had to sit out with him as far as I remember. He was better very soon, but for days I couldn't get him to say why he had been in such a condition. It came out at last that he had really been asleep and had had a very odd, disjointed sort of dream. He never saw much of what was around him, but he felt the scenes most vividly. First he made out that he was standing in a large room with a number of people in it, and that someone was opposite to him. He was very powerful, and he was being asked questions which he felt to be very important, and whenever he answered them, someone, either the person opposite to him or someone else in the room, seemed to be, as he said, making something up against him. All the voices sounded to him very distant, but he remembered bits of the things that were said. Where were you on the 19th of October? And is this your handwriting? And so on. I can see now, of course, that he was dreaming of some trial, but we were never allowed to see the papers, and it was odd that a boy of 8 should have such a vivid idea of what went on in the court. All the time, he felt, he said, the most intense anxiety and depression and hopelessness, though I don't suppose he used such words as that to me. Then after that, there was an interval in which he remembered being dreadfully restless and miserable. And then there came another sort of picture when he was aware that he had come out of doors on a dark, raw morning with a little snow about. It was in the street, or at any rate among the houses, that he felt that there were numbers and numbers of people there too, and that he was taken up some creaking wooden steps and stood on a sort of platform. But the only thing he could actually see was a small fire burning somewhere near him. Someone who had been holding his arm left hold of it and went towards his fire. And then he said the fright he was in was worse than at any other part of his dream. And if I had not wakened him, he didn't know what would have become of him. The curious dream which passed to have, wasn't it? Well, so much for that. It must have been later in the year that Frank and I were here, as I was sitting in the arbor just about sunset. I noticed the sun was going down, and told Frank to run in and see if tea was ready while I finished a chapter in the book I was reading. Frank was away longer than I expected, and the light was going so fast that I had to bend over a book to make it out. All at once, I became conscious of someone whispering to me inside the arbor. The only words I could distinguish, or thought I could, was something like, "Pull, pull, I'll push, you pull." I started up in something of a fright. The voice, it was course of angry, and yet, as if it came from a long, long way off, just as it had done in Frank's dream. But though I was startled, I had not courage to look round and try to make out where the sound came from. But it sounds very foolish, I know, but still it is the fact. I made sure that it was strongest when I put my ear to an old post, which was part of the end of the seat. I was so certain of this that I remembered making some marks on the post as deep as I could with the scissors out of my work basket. I don't know why. I wonder, by the way, whether that isn't the very post itself. Well, yes, it might be. There are marks and scratches on it. But I can't be sure. Anyhow, it was just like the post you have there. My father got to know that both of us had had a fright in the arbor, and he went down there himself one evening after dinner, and the arbor was pulled down at very short notice. I recollect hearing my father talking about it to an old man who used to do odd jobs in the place, and the old man saying, "Don't you fear for that, son. He's fast enough in there. Without no one, don't they can let him out." But when I asked who it was, I could get no satisfactory answer. Possibly my father or mother might have told me more about it when I grew up. But as you know, they both died when we were still quite children. I must say, it has always seemed very odd to me, and I've often asked the older people in the village whether they knew of anything strange. But either they knew nothing, or they wouldn't tell me. Dear, dear, how I have been boring you with my childish remembrances. But indeed that are but you absorb our thoughts quite remarkably for the time. You can fancy, can't you, the kind of stories that we've made up for ourselves. Well, dear Miss Anstruther, I must be leaving you now. We shall meet in town at Winchester, don't you be, etc., etc. The seats and the post were cleared away and uprooted, respectively, by that evening. Late summer weather is proverbially treacherous, and during fair time, Mrs. Collins sent up to ask for a little brandy, because her husband had taken a nasty chill, and she was afraid he would not be able to do much the next day. Mrs. Anstruther's morning reflections were not wholly placid. She was sure There was someone else. Servant, I suppose. Because I remember saying to him, horses, as quick as you can. And then waiting a bit. And next I heard several people coming upstairs. And a noise like spurs on a boarded floor. And then the door opened. And whatever it was that I was expecting happened. Yes, but what was that? You see, I couldn't tell. It was the sort of shock that upsets you, frankly. You either wake up, or else everything goes black. That was what happened to me. Then, I was in a big, dark walled room. Paneled, I think, like the other. And a number of people, and I was evidently standing your trial, I suppose, George? Goodness, yes, Mary, I was. But did you dream that too? Very odd. No, I didn't get enough sleep, was I? Go on, George, and I will tell you afterwards. Yes, well, I was being tried for my life, I've no doubt, from the state I was in. I had no one speaking for me, and somewhere there was the most fearful fellow on the bench, I should have said, only that he seemed to be pitching into me most unfairly, and twisting everything I said, and asking most abominable questions. What about? Why? Dates when I was at particular places, and letters I was supposed to have written, and why I had destroyed some papers. And I recollect his laughing at the answers I made in a way that quite daunted me. It doesn't sound much, but I can tell you, Mary, it was really appalling at the time. I'm quite certain there was such a man once, and the most horrible villain he must have been. The things he said. Thank you. I have no wish to hear them. I can go to the links anything myself. How did he change? Oh, against me. He saw to that. I do wish, Mary, I could give you a notion of the strain that came after that. And seemed to me to last for days. Waiting. And sometimes writing things I knew to be enormously important to me, and waiting for answers, and none coming. And after that, I came out. What makes you say that? Do you know what sort of thing I saw? Was it a dark, cold day, and snow in the streets, and a fire burning somewhere near you? By George, it was. You have had the same nightmare. Really not? Well, it is the oddest thing. Yes, I've no doubt it was an execution for high treason. I know I was laid on straw and jolting along most wretchedly, and then had to go up some steps, and someone was holding my arm, and I remember seeing a bit of a ladder, and hearing the sound of a lot of people. I really don't think I could bear now to go into a crowd of people and hear the noise they make talking. However, mercifully, I didn't get to the real business. The dream passed off as a sort of thunder instead. tokens called yesterday, and told me of a dream a brother had as a child when they lived here. And something did, no doubt, make me think of him when I was awake last night, listening to those horrible owls, and those men talking and laughing in the shrubbery. By the way, I wish you would see if they have done any damage, and speak to the police about it. And so, I suppose, from my brain, it must have got into yours while you were asleep. Curious, and I am sorry it gave you such a bad night. You had best be as much in the fresh air as you can today. Oh, it's all right now, but I think I will go over to the lodge and see if I can get a game of progress. And you? I have enough to do for this morning, and this afternoon, if I am not interrupted, there is my drawing. To be sure, I want to see that finished very much. No doubt it was discoverable in the shrubbery. Miss Renstrew looks surveyed with faint interest the sight of the rose garden, where the uprooted post still lay, and the hole it had occupied remained unfilled. Collins, upon inquiry made, proved to be better, but quite unable to come to his work. He expressed by the mouth of his wife a hope that he hadn't done nothing wrong clearing away those things. Mrs. Collins added that there was a lot of talking people in Westfield, and the whole ones was the worst. Seemed to think everything of them having been in the parish longer than what other people had. But as to what they said, no more could then be ascertained than that it had quite upset Collins, and was a lot of nonsense. Recruited by lunch and a brief period of slumber, Mrs. Renstrew settled herself comfortably upon her sketching chair in the path leading through the shrubbery to the side gate of the churchyard. Trees and buildings were among her favourite subjects, and here she had good studies in both. She worked hard, and the drawing was becoming a really pleasant thing to look upon by the time that the wooded hills to the west had shut off the sun. Still, she would have persevered, but the light changed rapidly, and it became obvious that the last touches must be added on the morrow. She rose and turned towards the house, pausing for time to take delight in the limpid green western sky. Then she passed on between the dark box bushes, and at a point just before the path that leads on the lawn, she stopped once again and considered the quiet evening landscape, and made a mental note that must be the tower of one of the roofing churches that one caught on the skyline. Then a bird, perhaps, rustled in the box bush on her left, and she turned and started at seeing what at first she took to be a 5th of November mask, peeping out among the branches. She looked closer. It was not a mask. It was a face. Large, smooth, and pink. She remembers the minute drops of perspiration which were starting from its forehead. She remembers how the jaw the door shut before she collapsed. Mr. and Mrs. Anstruther had been for a week or more recruiting at Brighton before they received a circular from the Essex Archaeological Society and a query as to whether they possessed certain historical portraits which it was desired to include in the forthcoming work on Essex portraits, to be published under the Society's auspices. There was an accompanying letter from the Secretary which contained the following passage. We are specially anxious to know whether you possess the original of the engraving of which I enclosed a photograph. It represents Sir blank blank, Lord Chief Justice under Charles II, who, as you doubtless know, retired after his disgrace to Westfield, and is supposed to have died there of remorse. It may interest you to hear that a curious entry has recently been found in the registers, not in Westfield, but in Prior's Ruthing, to the effect that the parish was so much troubled after his death that the rector of Westfield summoned the parsons of all the Ruthings to come and blame him, which they did. Beatrice ends by saying, the stake is in a field adjoining the churchyard of Westfield, on the west side. Perhaps you can let us know if any tradition to this effect is current in your parish. The incidents which the enclosed photograph recalled were productive of a severe shock to Mrs. Anstruther. It was decided that she must spend the winter abroad. Mr. Anstruther, when he went down to Westfield to make the necessary arrangements, not unnaturally told his story to the rector, an old gentleman, who showed little surprise. Really, I have managed to piece out for myself very much what must have happened, partly from old people's talk, and partly from what I saw in your grounds. Of course, we have suffered to some extent also. Yes, it was bad at first, like owls, as you say, and men talking sometimes. One night it was in this garden, and at other times about several of the cottages. But lately there has been very little. I think it will come. There is